This is Sound Effect. I'm Gabriel Spitzer, and today our theme is imperfect crime. Well, the ultimate crime, of course, is murder, and that is a crime in which it's impossible for a victim to get justice. And that was what was on Tony Bamonte's mind as he was working to solve those crimes as the former sheriff of Pendere County.
Murder cases, they're important cases. You take somebody's life away and all their friends and all their relatives and how it destroys everybody. And the police, we're the voice of the dead. You know, we're there to defend them and stick up for them and try to find out who killed them. That's who we are. They have nobody else speaking for them.
Tony retired in 1990, but while he was sheriff, he went and got a master's degree, and for his thesis, he dug into all these old unsolved murder cases. One that caught his eye happened all the way back in 1935. The victim was another lawman, George Conniff, the marshal in a place called Newport, northeast of Spokane. A reporter in Spokane wrote an article about what Tony was doing and about George Conniff's unsolved murder. And then another Spokane reporter named Bill Moreland would pick up the thread on the suspicion that the man who killed George Conniff was also a police officer.
And one of the people reading that piece that day was the son of the slain marshal. He said, "My sisters and I would like to learn more information." And they're astounded to learn for the first time, and they're in the twilight of their lives, that a police officer may have been involved in the death of their father. And it was a secret that had been withheld from these people for all their lives. And you could see from their raw emotions that they were just obsessed with this. And they were, of course, eager to know more. So I urged them to reach out to Sheriff Bamonte, which they did.
You can see the sadness in their eyes, just the way it was heartbreaking for me to see what they were going through.
When George Conniff was murdered, it was 1935. The country was mired deep in the Great Depression, and shortages of basic staples created a thriving black market for things like dairy products. Yes, this was a murder over stolen butter.
Some burglars were burglarizing a creamery in Newport. So the sheriff is on patrol one night.
George Conniff happened upon the scene and confronted the burglars.
A gunfight apparently occurs.
Conniff emptied his pistol, didn't hit anybody, and was shot, I think, three or four times.
And the sheriff ends up dead.
The robbers got away, but signs pointed toward a main suspect in the shooting, a troubled Spokane police officer named Clyde Ralston. So half a century later, reporter Bill Moreland started poking around.
I found a series of stories where Ralston's name had been mentioned. He subsequently was involved in fatally shooting a 15-year-old kid who had stolen a car and was running from police officers. And a short time later, Ralston left the employment of the police department. It looks like he left under pressure. And in my contact with the Spokane Police Department, they refused to admit that they'd ever had a police officer named Clyde Ralston. Even when I dug out archived newspaper articles showing that, yes, Clyde Ralston had been an officer, that he had been involved in other episodes that generated news coverage, and they refused to acknowledge they even had somebody by that name. And it's like, how deep does a code of silence here go?
Another police officer enters this story, Dan Mangan. He's 86 years old. He worked for the Spokane Police Department. His daughter reached out to Tony Bamonte because she knew her dad had something to do with the murder of George Conniff.
He'd go to the police guild and he'd get drunk a lot. And then when he'd come home, he would tell her, you know, I need to talk to a detective one of these days. And she would say, well, why is that, Dad? Well, I can't tell you. And then when this story broke,
she said, told us both separately that my dad, working the beat with Clyde Ralston, knew all about it, knew that Ralston was involved in the murder. And in fact, Dan Mangan even knew where the murder weapon had been disposed of in the Spokane River. And he told me the whole story. It was in a paper sack, and we all knew why we were getting rid of it and whose gun it was and why we were getting rid of it. It was involved in the murder of a town marshal.
I said, did you drop it or throw it? He says, I dropped it. I said, where was it dropped from?
And so I drove down to the Post Street Bridge. I showed up there with a photographer. And when you're standing on the bridge with a 86-year-old retired police officer, and he says, yeah, I knew that my fellow officers were involved in the murder of another police officer, it's like jaw-dropping.
Dan Mangan, the retired Spokane cop who was in his last years, wanted to get this off his conscience. He said higher-ups in the police department told him to get rid of the murder weapon.
Law enforcement in 1935 was involved in covering this up, and law enforcement in 1989 were still involved in covering it up. The next thing was I got a call. Tomorrow at daybreak, Avista Power Company will be lowering the river level so we can go down in the riverbed where Dan Mangan told us he dropped the murder weapon.
And the river's going to be without water in most of the area for probably about 4 or 5 hours, and you'll be able to go down there and search then.
And Sheriff Bomani and some of his metal detector volunteers plan to take advantage of that and search the river bottom to say, you know, is it possible the gun's still there? I mean, I had no way of knowing. I really didn't think they would find anything.
It was extremely slick down there. It was just like walking in mud. As we started the search, I explained to everyone it was dropped from here.
I was, again, on the very bridge that I'd stood with Dan Mangan, and I was looking at below and could see the sheriff and some of his people scouring the riverbed.
And when I found it, it was so rusted and old, and it was almost disintegrated.
The words of Dan Mangan were echoing in my head. It's like, there it is, right where he told me it would be.
The handle grips were completely rotted off it. The hammer was rotted off it. The trigger guard was rotted off it. When I carried it up and the connoisseurs saw it, all three of them were in tears about this. And it's so small and little to realize that this was the weapon that was used to kill their dad.
There's the gun, and it had been there for 54 years.
So they found that murder weapon after half a century, which seems like a one in a million shot. But how likely is it that they could also find the suspect after so long? Well, Bill Moreland, the reporter, tracked down Clyde Ralston, the man suspected of taking part in the deadly butter burglary. He was now a little old man living in a small town in Montana, and Moreland went to confront him.
My strategy was to just show up unannounced. I knocked on his door. His wife answered. Of course, I identified myself, told her who I was and where I was from, and let her know that this case was so important that I had driven this far to talk to Clyde Ralston in person and let him know I really was interested in his side of the story or what he had to say about this. And she sort of stalls me, hoping that I'll, you know, sort of go away, I guess. And I just kept her talking. I said, I'm just interested in who is Clyde Ralston. I mean, he's been painted to be this killer of another cop. We know that he left the employment of the police department after shooting a teenage boy fatally. Tell me more about him. There must be more to the man. He's your husband. Tell me about him. So she brings out a wedding picture of the two of them and starts opening up slightly. And then I said, I appreciate the opportunity. Is there any chance at all I could shake his hand? And in the background, I hear Clyde Ralston say, I'll shake his hand. And he comes hobbling out the door. He let me take his picture. And it's a picture of, you know, clearly an old man. He's standing there in his white stocking feet with his gnarled wood cane, his pants held up by suspenders. He has on a long-sleeved print shirt. He's got his glasses tucked into his pocket. He looks old and tired. It's the final days of Clyde Ralston standing on his porch in St. Ignatius, Montana, denying that he was involved in a 1935 murder of a police officer.
This case stretched on for over a year. It became the oldest active murder case in the United States. And even though the flaws in this perfect crime were now exposed for all to see, Ralston was never charged with the murder. He wound up dying in his hometown in Montana, a free man.